Commission. It is Tuesday, December 21st, 6 o'clock. We have a full quorum. We are holding this meeting via teleconference, and we will start with a moment of silence. All right, thank you. Next up is Planning Commissioner announcements. Anybody have anything? Seeing none, we'll move on to the public comment period. This is the time for open comments about things which are not on the agenda, or if there is something on the agenda later that you would like to comment on now because you can't stay for it, you may do so. Hyland, do we have anybody in the queue with their hand raised?
Thank you, Chair. There are no raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. All right. We will move on. Do we have any Oh, yes. We're doing our presentation on the pre-approved accessory dwelling unit plans. We should have Ryan Brockett, architect and workbench, with us.
So, if I may, I'll do a little kind of introduction. They're doing a presentation which is the result of a grant-funded regional program designed to develop ADU designs that have options that'll work for each of the five participating jurisdictions. Through the process, the group of cities recognized that some of the cities are going to have more utility of smaller plans, and some of the cities will have more utility of larger plans. And Morro Bay in particular is likely to use smaller plans more often because of the site sizes and the lack of vacant parcels. So as a cooperative regional project, we believe that what the team has come up with has something for everybody, something that every of the five participating jurisdictions can use. So for presentation, we have Jamila Cannon with Workbench, I think Alexandra Schuyler with Workbench, and Samantha Sutter with Meta Urban Design, and they are part of the design team, so they can take it away.
Great, thank you.
Thanks so much, Nancy. My name is, I'm just waiting for Samantha. I see Samantha's joining. I don't know if Alexandra's joining yet or not. I don't see her. Do you know if she was in the, can someone tell me if she was in the room?
No, I just put someone up there. It was Workbench host was what it said.
Oh, so. There we go. Yeah. Okay, that's her. Great.
Okay.
So I will go ahead and get started. My name is Jamila Cannon. I'm the founder of Workbench. We had two presentations tonight. So the Brockitecture team and another Workbench team member are with Arroyo Grande right now. And Alexandra, Samantha, and I are here at the Morro Bay meeting. So we are going to just walk through what we've done so far and talk a little bit about next steps, and then we're open for feedback and comments. So I'm going to share my screen and run our slideshow. Can everybody see see my screen?
No.
No.
There it is.
Okay, great. So like Nancy said, this is a regional program. So we're working with four municipalities right now. So the goal was to try to create a set of ADUs that would be applicable to smaller parcels like the ones we're going to see in Morro Bay, all the way up to ones that would fit in a Atascadero. So they need to be fairly flexible and still creative and hopefully fit into as many backyards as we can possibly get them into. So we'll go over a little bit of background information, and then Alexandra's going to talk about floor plans and architectural styles and exterior design, and then I'll talk about our next steps. So I think we kind of already covered this sheet. It's a grant-funded program. We're working together with those with other municipalities, and then we're also working together as a consultant team. So there's a lot of collaboration on it on this program. Ryan Brockett or Brockitecture is down in Paso Robles. He also teaches at Cal Poly. I'm a Cal Poly grad. My company is up in Santa Cruz. So we've all been working together with both the jurisdictions and each other over Teams and Zoom and Miro board, which you guys will see a little bit of later in the presentation. So it's, the whole process has been really collaborative. We started off by trying to collect as much data as we could on the different municipalities and their standard lot sizes, how big the homes were in the parcels, and then other constraints like Coastal Commission or fire sprinkler requirements or maybe all electric desires, that kind of stuff. So lots of background information on zoning code, lot sizes, and then jurisdictional desires. We came up with some design drivers. So how are we gonna focus our design efforts on this? Efficiency is obviously really important when you're designing small units. So we wanted to minimize circulation space. We created wet wall cores, which you'll see when we get to the drawings, tried to make the structures really efficient and optimize materials, basically also make it as creative as possible for homeowners to change things within, you know, they could use multiple different exterior packages and materials, but not really affect the structure or the design too much. Flexibility we felt was really important, that the spaces were adaptable. So to the extent possible, we'll locate shear walls and structure on the exterior so the interior stuff could be manipulated and moved around a little bit without needing to go back into the building department. So that's kind of one way we were thinking about flexibility. Site adaptability is another one. So could we mirror the plan or rotate it? Could they be flipped, and would they fit on multiple properties if they were moved a little bit? And then strategic window opening. So could the ADUs be, they could be flexible for different setback requirements. So in smaller parcels, they might be right up against the minimum setback on the lot line. In larger parcels, they might not, so you could add some windows on different sides of the exterior. And then privacy and open space we felt was really important. So how could we create a sense of entry and a little bit of visual interest on the front of the units as also the back of the units? And if you rotated those, would you still get some privacy, creating a sense of arrival, that kind of thing? So we did a survey with the cities. The RFP had some standard sizes that they wanted to see, and then we did a survey with all the cities to see which cities thought the different sizes would be most applicable to their jurisdiction. So Morro Bay obviously felt like the smaller units would be more applicable and more usable. Grover Beach was the smaller units, and then also kind of eking up into the larger units. Arroyo Grande and Atascadero kind of headed towards the larger units. We went through a big design charrette internally with our team, just kind of playing around with how do we organize these in a way that they can kind of grow and expand and be really efficient. We looked at some precedents of work that we've all done collectively in the past. And then we kind of fine-tuned that even more. We looked at some bar plans, we looked at T plans, we looked at an L plan, and we looked at a block plan, and we felt like as we were studying these dimensions, as the projects grew from the small studio sizes to the larger units, the kind of L-shaped plan gave us the most flexibility, as well as the kind of the best overall dimensions that would fit on the most lots. So that's where we landed on that. And then Alexandra, I'll hand it over to you to walk through the actual floor plans. And if you want, I can keep control on the presentation.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. We'll just keep it going. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for having us. I'm Alexandra. I'm from Workbench, and I'm one of the designers on this project. Just to start getting into the floor plans, as Jamili mentioned, from the initial project kickoff and the RFP, we had these kind of specific square footages that we were designing into. We really worked early in the process with the cities to survey, you know, make sure that those were the correct sizes for each of these ADUs, and then to start on some space planning and floor planning for them. So the matrix of sizes in the total program, let me minimize that for a second. In the total program, we start with our smallest unit, which is an efficiency studio, all the way up to a two-bedroom plus. And for Morro Bay, as we all know, the efficiency studio and the traditional studio, which is our second smallest unit, are probably going to be the most applicable for your lots and needs there. But here you can see the entire range and how the program grows so that across all four of those jurisdictions, you know, all those communities can find something within the program that will work for their lots. We did work with every jurisdiction to really talk about, okay, you know, if these are the set of floor plans that are going to work best for you, let's make sure that we're hearing the needs of your community in those. So Nancy's been involved in helping us with the smallest ones, and then when we get to the larger ones, you know, Atascadero's had a bit more of a voice. So it's been a really collaborative and fun process to work on these together. And we start with the efficiency at 315 square feet, and then our studio at 444. One bedroom goes to 625. One bedroom plus is about 735 square feet. Two bedroom at 895, and our two bedroom plus is a little large right now, but we're targeting that to get you right at 1,000 square feet. So with all of these, we're still refining the floor plans and still refining some of the dimensions, a foot here, a foot there, making sure they really will work with lots in each area, but these are the general targets that we're designing into. Next, please, Jamie. Thank you. So we'll start with the efficiency unit, which kind of functions as the core of the whole program, and this is the one we came up with first and are really excited about truly how efficient it is. One of our first design decisions was to organize all the plumbing in the unit along one wall, which we're calling a wet wall. This allows, one, it to be easy to build. The plumber's only touching one wall, and we're also not running pipes throughout the building. It's an efficient way to build, and we found a lot of success in it when we constructed ADUs in our past. So we started with that. We have in this one a fairly typical sized bathroom. It could be a tub or a shower in here, and then we also have a room or an area up in this top left corner of the bathroom for an optional washer dryer should a homeowner want that. We've built in two areas for storage that are flanking the pocket door. In the main living space, we have an efficiency kitchen here, so it is a two burner, pretty small kitchen, but we think it's really functional. And then space for on the far right side, we've bumped out a little bit of an alcove here, so someone could have a Murphy bed there. If they would prefer to not have a bed and a couch, they can have a home office there. There's a few ways we work with the furniture arrangement to make sure that it would allow for a bed and a couch, or possibly pull-out sofa, or as I said, a Murphy bed or some built-in furniture there. And it also creates a little bit of a recessed entry, just a couple feet, I think it's about 18 inches. So we found that just recessing that entry a little bit is something that the residents of ADUs really like. It's just a bit of a threshold, allows them a place to put down their shopping bags when they're opening their front door, put down their shoes, or have a little house plant there. So this is coming in at 315 square feet. It's just about 13 and a half feet wide, just about 24 and a half feet long. As I said, we're still refining some of those a little bit, but you know, we're pleased and feeling like this is pretty efficient from a structural point of view, from a construction point of view, and most of all from a living point of view. Next one, please, Jamili. As we get a little bit larger, we grow into our studio unit. So this goes to 445 square feet, so about 130 larger. Slightly wider, slightly longer. The bathroom here, we start over on that area, we still have our same wet wall core, and we've been able to put the washer and dryer adjacent to that in this one. There is enough space. So again, optional washer dryer that would be private from the bathroom. We've created, when you walk in the front door, a bit more of a sleeping alcove. So this is one of the areas where Jamili is speaking about flexibility. Right now we're showing this as a built-in wall that's dividing the space, but depending on how someone would like to use this, it could just be completely open as well, if someone really just wanted that whole 30-foot span to be open. But trying to think about how people might be using this, and how to build in, so if people want to separate space in a small studio, they're able to do that. Most of the front windows are on the front of the home, but we do have some optional windows that we're starting to build in towards the back. So if the lot and the setback did allow, we are going to have some options in there so people could get light in from two sides of the unit. And we also are thinking about, we added an optional back door for, again, units where it kind of allows or it makes sense for the homeowner or the resident of the ADU, where people could come in, maybe have a bit of a back porch, have a little bit of a gardening area, be able to drop off their laundry or come in from the beach and have a bit of a service area there. And in options where that's not needed, they'd have some additional storage space. I should also note in that one, sorry if you want to go back, Jamili, we have extended the kitchen just a bit, so it does accommodate full-size appliances, but if a homeowner wished and they really wanted to make it more efficient, they could do some efficiency appliances or an under-counter fridge as well. So that would be up to the homeowner in construction, but starting to think about how all that would fit in these units as we move forward. And I'll go to the next one. And I know these aren't as applicable for Morro Bay, so I'll speak for them a little bit more quickly, but I'd like you to see how the whole program kind of ties together. As we get up to the larger sizes, we start to add a defined bedroom that is accessible off this laundry room and bathroom area, some internal closets, and then also some options for sliding glass doors in place of a window at the rear. We also just made the bathroom a little bit wider once you get into the one bedrooms, but in the studios, really wanted to be cognizant of square footage and how that's used and keep it as functional as possible. As we get up into the larger units, again, we're calling this a one bedroom plus, so our kind of alcove that we had in our studio unit comes back into the living area. You can see here how it's set up for living room use, but up above could also be set up as that sleeping alcove, giving people some flexibility. So this could live as a two bedroom, or it could live as a one bedroom with a really great living room area and possibly room for, you know, a larger kitchen or maybe a home office if people want that use there. Up into our two-bedroom unit, very similar floor plan here. We've added a second bedroom to the back, went through a lot of design exercises and decided that by bumping out that back like that, it allows us on many sites for some of the cities that can fit this. They can have windows on two sides of the ADU, which is really a challenge in some places. And we're also starting to carve out some outdoor space as we get to these larger units. And we've found that anywhere we can add a little bit of a porch or a threshold for entry or even kind of a private larger space like this, when people are living in these ADUs, they really enjoy having a little bit of that inside-outside lifestyle that we get to have so much here on the Central Coast. We're hoping to bring some of that experience into these small homes. Next one, thank you. And then we go up to our largest unit, which is really, the City of Atascadero has been very interested in this one in particular, but similar concept where we start with our two bedroom, and then we have added on where it could either be a full third bedroom or a den, or it can just be a fairly nicely sized living area for some of their larger parcels. So here's kind of where we started, but just to wrap back up, you can see how all the units compare to one another. As I said, in our next stage, after gathering feedback from you all and from all the cities that we've been working with, we'll go back to the team and talk about, you know, square footage, make sure we're really nailed down on that, make sure that our dimensions are really where they should be as far as how they're fitting on the sites, and then we'll start to go into our design development and construction docs after this. Go ahead. I think that's fine, Jamili. We can go on. The other part of the project that we're really excited about is not just building in flexibility on the floor plans, but also in the exteriors. We really did a lot of digging into each of the jurisdictions in each of these cities and what it means to live on the Central Coast in general. We have a really great range of architectural precedent that allows for a lot of that indoor outdoor living. So we started from that, and then if you want to move on, Jamili, thank you. We defined four distinct styles, And we worked with all of the jurisdictions on this as well, got their feedback. We had some fun surveys and voting as far as what they liked and what they didn't like and what they thought was most applicable. And we ended up with these four exterior architectural styles. So one of which is Coastal Ranch, which is kind of inspired by the Spooner Farmhouse out there on the coast. We have Backyard Craftsman, which kind of pulls from Arroyo Grande and even San Luis Obispo and some of those wonderful traditional homes they have there. We have California Modern, which speaks to some of the more modern styles that we see, as well as we find the styles particularly popular in backyard ADUs. And then our Beach Bungalow, which was really inspired by kind of more modest forms, a lot of opportunities for color and personalization, and really feeling friendly and welcoming as people approach. Next, please. We took each of our, rather than applying the style to each of the sizes at this point, we took one of our studio units and then our largest units and worked through the design that way. And I'll show you some of those right now if you want to keep going, Jamili. So here's our Coastal Ranch style. You'll see it on the left in the studio. So this is the more traditional studio size, which is 445 square feet. And then it just as a reminder, the efficiency studio is basically losing this little porch with the two windows over there and the sleeping alcove, but thinking it would have similar styling. But this, you know, as I said, is really inspired by our California ranches that we know and love here, lower roof pitch, and then kind of allowing for some indoor-outdoor living space out inside the roofline as appropriate. Next one, please. Our Backyard Craftsman. On this one, we have a higher roof pitch, more traditional styling, excited about what the trim details could be here. Again, opportunities for homeowners to personalize and really make this style fit within, you know, their aesthetic and how their current home feels. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for personalization on this one. Next one, please. Our California Modern, which is pictured here in kind of more of a 2021 version of modern that we've seen, but we also think on some sites people might want to make it more of a, you know, a beachside contemporary, or people can make it feel a little bit more mid-century. On this one, you'll see that the two-bedroom still has kind of a low-slope roof that's the same as the ranch, but on our two smaller units, on the studio units, we have worked with the task force and everyone agreed that we'd like to offer a shed option. So the smaller units that Morro Bay is most interested in will have gable roof options and shed roof options, allowing them to have different profiles on different sites. And again, giving those homeowners on those smaller sites a little bit more of an opportunity to choose a style that really works for them. So clean and simple here, where you see outlined in the pink little dash is just kind of a small opportunity for exterior screens or plants and some opportunities for homeowners to personalize even further. And then our next one is our Beach Bungalow, which you see here with both the gable form and the shed roof form. And this is really a wonderful vehicle for texture and color, especially in the beachside communities. You can see it with really kind of a weathered looking wood. It could also be beautiful in some colors. People could choose to do vertical or horizontal siding. So simple form, but allowing for a lot of customization. And then here is kind of the sheet that shows all four of the styles together for the studio. So you'll see we have options that have different gable slopes. We have options with the shed, and trying to really make them range so someone could go pretty traditional with it, or also, you know, as appropriate, push it into more of a modern aesthetic. And then the next page we have here is showing those same examples on the larger units. One thing that we're working on in the next phase as we continue to refine the exteriors and the final forms of these is putting together an architectural style guide for each style, which would make it really easy for a homeowner to pick up a plan set and say, okay, you know, I know I like a traditional craftsman, but where do I even start with that? Or I know I want kind of a fun modern beach bungalow. Where do I start with that? We'll be providing them, you know, a sheet that, that gives them some material direction and some combinations of things so that it makes that process a lot easier for them. Just thinking about what the whole process is for the homeowner and how we can make every step of that feel really natural for them and that they have the information they need at their fingertips. With that, I'm going to turn it back to Jamili. She'll talk about where we're going next with the project.
So Alexandra covered, some of the next steps in terms of design. We'll take the feedback and comments that we've received from all of our jurisdiction presentations and do some massaging of the plans, and then we'll dive into design development. So really figuring out what we need to document. We're gonna be talking with our MEP subconsultants and then continuing to just really to start documenting how do we show this flexibility and how do we show the different details. So like the craftsman might have different porch details and different eave details. The modern one will look different than that. So how do we start to lay that out on the sheet and getting those details into the set? So we'll really be working on that in January and February. Someone who did not get to present a lot this time around, but Samantha is going to be working on all of the informational materials for the community. So her work is going to take the work that we're doing, as well as the work, as well as just an understanding of zoning code and what the current ADU codes are in all of the communities, and putting them together in a packet, probably something that's downloadable and available online, or something that you'd walk through on each jurisdiction's website. So she'll be crafting that material and how the homeowner can experience that, as well as where they can get all their information so that they know how to build either one of these pre-approved or prototype ADUs, or also just if they wanted to do a junior ADU or they wanted to do a detached custom ADU, they would know what that process was. So Samantha's work is really gonna start to kick into high gear in the next few months as well. And then we're targeting a, you know, we'll get our construction documents done and get them turned into the, I think that the plan is to do one, we'll have one point of contact for a plan review, but all of the communities will get to see them. So we'll get, so they'll be plan checked and approved and ready to go. And ideally we're gonna wrap up sometime in, you know, late spring, early summer. I think that is the end of the presentation. So Nancy, I'll turn it back to you or to the chair of the Planning Commission, whoever wants to speak next.
Great, thank you for that presentation. There we go. Nancy, did you have anything you wanted to add at this point?
Nothing else to add, just here to answer questions if you have any.
Perfect. All right. So back to the commission. Anybody want to start with questions, responses? Joe, have you got anything?
Yeah.
No.
I always have something, fortunately or unfortunately. It was interesting. I had an occasion a few days ago to visit a mother and daughter, friends of ours, and the daughter's is an architect in Southern California and does basically high-end residential. And she had, maybe half a dozen years ago, she had built an ADU on her mother's property, and that's where she lives now. And it was fascinating to spend some time in it and look at what she did. And hers is very small, it's about 450 square feet. And she did something that I'd been interested in before. And she took a shipping container and use that as the sort of the core where she had the electrical and the plumbing and the sewer and everything necessary for the kitchen and the bathroom and a closet. And then she added a bedroom and a little work area and a living room area. So it's pretty spacious. So I really am kind of excited about the potential the potential in these things. I did notice in the plans there were, I don't know which plan, but there were a couple of plans that had I'll call it an entryway inside a door. I wonder if we should preserve some flexibility so that the people that wanted to maximize the living space would be able to change that and eliminate that entryway. And then I'm wondering, while I really like the porches and everything, again, some people might have room on their property to do a porch that was, you know, not under the living space roofline. And so it'd be nice if, you know, if the plans could maintain a certain flexibility so that if space permitted, they could maximize the interior space and still have a patio and a little bit of a porch. Those are my thoughts.
Great, thanks, Joe. Bill, you got anything?
Yeah, let's see. I have three questions for everybody. Can you hear me, Susan?
Yes.
First, thank you for doing this. I think the ADU thing offers really a lot of opportunity, both for density and for affordability. One, could you guys outline the advantages of doing the pre-described unit? In other words, is this going to have an advantage with plan check? Is this going to have an advantage, I don't know, in industrial parts? Is it going to have, what are the advantages of doing these units? Two, I think it would be super helpful to see these units set on site plans, even if they're only, you know, typical, it's never going to be the same, but it would be much more compelling to me to see it how it actually fits on a site. Three, have you guys thought about affordability? In other words, I mean real affordability, not just because they're small or because we can make them efficiently, but is there any way to incentivize like a percentage income affordability, like an actual plan? Those are my questions.
Okay. Shall we... would you like to respond to that, or should we go through the rest of the commissioners and see?
I can respond to at least some of the advantages question, and
right.
I think Nancy might be able to talk about the affordability a little bit. And then the comments just about the porch flexibility and showing on site plans. We're just writing those down, and when we take everything back to the group, we'll discuss all of those comments and see what we can do to accommodate.
Great.
So on the advantages, they will be approved in every jurisdiction. So a homeowner can come to the jurisdiction, sign a waiver, release, and receive these plans free of charge. So they'll save money on all of the architectural fees, all of the MEP design fees, all of the plan check fees. I believe most of the jurisdictions have a reduced size planning fee. So you know, if you're using or building permit fee, so if you're doing a smaller one, then your building permit fees are smaller than if you're doing a larger unit.
But no break in fees, you don't think?
I don't know. Nancy might be able to answer that question.
Okay.
And then as far as there's some tricky stuff, right, with like septic or fire sprinklers or some of the deferred submittal stuff. So we're going to do as much as we can to encapsulate as much of that's reasonable within this plan set. So we're going to try to do both a design that's all electric and a design that's gas. So homeowners have some flexibility in that. I think for fire sprinklers, we won't be addressing them in the plan. So there will be some fees for people who might need to do septic or fire sprinkler, or if they've got like a really kind of wild foundation need. Those might be things that homeowners would have to go and do on their own, but for the most part, we're going to try to get as much of that stuff into like the baseline plan set as we can.
So are you thinking about, I mean, because you're going to have to address, you know, mechanical, plumbing, electrical, foundations, are you going to provide, I don't know, consultants that the homeowner could talk to who are familiar with the process? Have you thought about that?
In other jurisdictions, we haven't really been able to recommend, like, hey, go talk to so, you know, it feels like favoritism if we're saying here's the people to go talk to. But our names and the names of our consultants will be on the drawing. So homeowners are welcome to call us or the MEP designers who are working with us and you know, get feedback or get some consultation on the unit.
You should encourage the cities to have a list of consultants, because one of the most difficult, I think, situations is fitting it on the site. you know, figuring out, you know, how the utilities run, you know, that stuff can be as expensive as the unit for such a small unit. So I think if you guys could have a little advice on that, that would be helpful.
I think that those are all of the questions I'm able to answer. I don't know if Nancy wants to answer any of the affordability ones.
Site plan? Did you talk about the site?
I just took a note. I took a note of that. So if we can do that or figure out how to do that within the program, we'll definitely do that.
Can you see why it would be helpful?
Yeah. So our construction document set will have like a sample site plan on it, and depending on what each jurisdiction needs to have. You know, the way we've done it in the past is we've had a site plan sheet, and the homeowner has had to fill that one out, you know, so they had to draw in the setbacks or have somebody do it for them, you know, and show the utility connections. But we've basically done like a template to walk them through the steps.
I'm thinking something more like that, just to help people understand how they might sit on the site,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how they fit, side yards, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And that'll be part of Samantha's work as well, just to kind of explain what is a side yard? How do you site a building? Like, that kind of stuff will be in Samantha's documentation, too.
Nancy, did you want to respond to the affordability question?
Yeah. So, an affordability, right now, these are considered affordable by design, and there's no mechanism through state law that allows us to require and or track affordability. So there's, for the housing element reporting, there's kind of an assumed percentage of ADUs that are assumed to be affordable, and we get to count those even though there's no evidence. But in the implementation plans for the housing element, which is currently a work in progress, we are looking at ways, it's a little bit of a give and take. You have to incentivize someone in order for them to commit to something. And affordability for any unit really needs to be deed restricted or we don't have any control over it. So we are working on those kind of ideas. And hopefully we'll come up with something where there's a give and take where we can kind of require some affordability commitment to get something else.
Oh, that's good news, Nancy. And Susan and I were talking earlier. I was involved in a study for LA County where we looked at how to incentivize affordability with the ADUs. And I'd love to bring the results of that study so you could take a look at them. I think in a lot of ways it might really fit, you know, Morro Bay and Arroyo Grande. It might be better up here because it's a way to introduce affordability that's a softer touch rather than large projects. It really does fit the kind of urban fabric that we have. And one of the big things that we found was incentivizing property tax. And that's complex because that would involve the county as well. But the incentive is substantial, you know, to really encourage real affordability that's trackable and would be restricted so you can't, you know, just stop doing it. So I'd love to pass that on to you and see what you think.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
Great. Thanks, Bill. Did we answer all your questions so far?
Yeah, good.
All right. Asia, how about you?
Yeah, I just want to make sure I clarify. These pre-approved plans do not disallow other plans, correct? It's just that these allow for a mainstream process for homeowners.
That's correct. So anyone can design their own. And in Morro Bay, most of the applications for ADUs that we see are adaptive reuse of existing buildings and or portions of the home. And people will continue to do that. They can design their own, or they can use these pre-approved plans, which the advantage is they're free or reduced design costs, mm-hmm. and they're already pre-approved. So it still will require a coastal development permit, but the reviews will go much quicker. So money and time is the advantage.
For sure. And does one of these plans, maybe the smaller efficiency, does it, now that I hear you saying it, a lot of ADUs are converted maybe from a detached garage or an existing building on a property. Do one of these plans fit closely to be adaptable to that kind of situation? Say someone has a detached garage, could these plans...
The garage sizes are so non-standard, and the placement on the sites, that would really be difficult to do. If someone wants to just convert their garage and it's structurally sound, then they're really just working with interior design and utilities.
Right. Okay. All right. Those are my questions right now.
Great. Thanks, Asia. And Mike.
Hello. How are you doing? Thank you again to the presenters for the great information. I just want to piggyback on what Bill said a little bit here, especially from where I come from, the Bay Area, where tiny homes are taking off like, you know, there's no tomorrow, but obviously there's a reason for that because we need just more homes in general. But this kind of reminds me of what I've seen a lot of over here as far as trying to lay things out. But I like the fact that the presenters started with the fact that they want these things to be efficient, flexible, and privacy and outdoor space is very important. But I thought I'd add, maybe we can add in there, you know, the fourth element, which might not be a standalone, but something like to the effect of affordability, you know, just efficiency, flexibility, privilege, outdoor space, and affordability. Because if you think about it, when you take everything you've given us, the person who's doing this is going to have a lot of flexibility in picking the design that they want. You presented four of them, but the kind of design, say, coastal, you know, Craftsman, California Modern, beach bungalow, and then as far as these design elements, you know, as far as like what you're going to be laying out in January and February, as far as like final designs based upon what you're getting your input on. But I heard you say that you would be coming back in January and February with your, you know, schematics on what your designs, final designs might look like, and, you know, possibly complete the project. But at that point, I was wondering if this would come back to the Planning Commission again for our final review of your, of what you come up with. Because like I said, I think it's all good. I think the fact that you've provided a lot of flexibility, not only how the person would develop and, you know, do an ADU as far as, and I'm going to go again with affordability of how they can afford to do it, as well as if they're going to do it and we have some affordability issues in our city, how could we take advantage of those as well? So I just like the way it was done in general, but I was just wondering if we're going to get another, this might be for Scott, if we're going to get a chance to review them again to see how our, you know, how we maybe give you input on the final plans that you come up with as far as your design, your designs.
Scott, do you have a response there?
I'm trying to get back on. Yeah, I don't think we're scoped to bring it back to you in the contract through the process. So certainly staff could bring it back potentially to show it to you. But really, we're taking the input now and then trying to finalize the design so we can move to construction documents and that type of thing, as was indicated in the presentation. So,
okay, then given that, then if this is going to be our only shot, I think that everywhere in California, you're going to have this issue of affordability. Affordability shouldn't just mean affordable homes. It should mean how much does it cost to do this? I think that's what Bill was driving at. How much does it cost to do something like this? Or somebody was driving at that. But I think there should be some kind of affordability element to this, not just for how much it costs, but if it falls under affordable housing, say. So if we could build something like that in there, I think it would be perfect. It's just going to add to what you've already given us. I like it already. I just think it's going to make it a better product if we can, you know, express to everybody we're trying to express this to, that affordability is a big element for us as far as what we're trying to do with these homes, or these ADUs, excuse me. I keep on wanting to call them homes because we're building these as homes in the Bay Area, but they're being built as ADUs over here.
Well, so, they are homes. They're yeah. hopefully going to be somebody's home.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is we're actually calling these homes, tiny homes in the Bay Area. So what I'm saying, we're calling them ADUs over here. I want to call these tiny homes over here. But what I'm saying is how much are they going to cost? And what are the different kinds of things people could do to make them fit for what they want them to fit for, all the design elements as well as the affordability elements inside and out. Inside and out. So that's my input.
I think that's excellent input, and something I probably should have mentioned is there's things, you know, that the jurisdictions can do from their side to encourage our side. On the architectural side, we're trying to make them as efficient to build as possible, and also in the four exterior styles, trying to identify materials that are, for all of them, readily available, and then of architectural details. So some people can choose one that probably, you know, more of the ranch or the California modern that are simpler, require a little bit less as far as finishes. If you wanted to trick it out, they could go for a craftsman style and add a lot of trim. Mm-hmm. So we've tried to build into all of our design decisions a range that absolutely focuses on making sure things are, we're choosing things and choosing details that allow people to do them at a cost. And we are also having those conversations with, say, our structural engineer to make sure we're not engineering it in a way that's not affordable to build, but we're doing it in a way that's really, you know, working to engineer it so that the structure of it is also easy to construct, doesn't require a lot of special components and things like that. So I appreciate the comment, and I think it's that we will be part.
Yeah, and Alexander, just as Alexander, right? Did I get that name right? Yeah, Alexander, because I wanted to say this earlier, but this could possibly be an area where we could do a lot of prefabbing here, right? Pre-manufacturing of some of the stuff we'll be using for that affordability element, right? So in other words, how do we communicate with our cities the fact that we could do a lot of this prefab, right, and save a lot of money?
All right. Thanks, Mike. Really appreciate this presentation. I think... folks have touched on some of the thoughts I had. One thing, though, just was looking at the numbers of windows and light coming in and wondering if there's a way to get any more. Is there a way to do skylights? Those, I think they're called solar cans, you know, which actually can, that's probably not the right word, but it's like a tube that brings in a lot of light, especially for these small places. And then also wondering about looking at these roof designs, they might be great for solar panels. And again, that wouldn't necessarily have to be part of the design, but a way to suggest that homeowners could sort of recoup some of the cost too by installing those might be a good thing. But I do personally like more light and natural air circulation through windows.
Yeah, and I think that is always, everyone loves that. It's great, and it's definitely a challenge in some small ADUs like this, especially depending on the setbacks, but it's something we're very aware of.
Even high windows, maybe?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons on the these smaller units, we added the shed roof option because we can get some clear story windows in there, which adds a little bit more light. And then also by having the door on the side, you can get some cross ventilation through the unit, even though it's coming in maybe one living area. At least the breezes can be mixing in there rather than just having openings on one side. So yeah, it's definitely something we're taking into consideration as we figure out exactly where the windows are and which ones these smaller units can fit.
Thank you.
I'm going to add to that too, Alexander. Just the way we're showing them right now is as if it was right up against the property line, like assuming a lot of the smaller units will have to be like at the 4-foot setback, but we'll show alternate window locations. So we'll in the plans that will have that, and that way if you're able to be 5 feet away from the property line, you can add windows. We're also probably going to design some vaulted ceilings in them, like on the gable roofs, right? There's a good opportunity there to have a vaulted ceiling, so that'll allow more daylight and just make the smaller units feel more open.
Great.
Hey, Susan, I have one more comment. Yeah, thanks. Thanks again to the presenters and to all your work. very competent designs. I guess I would love to encourage you, as Susan just did, one of the great options would be to have alternative roof shapes so mm-hmm. that you could adjust the roof to fit the orientation. These roofs, the way you've shown them, might not work, right, depending upon how the unit sits in the yard. Is there a way to show alternates that if it's a south-facing lot versus a north-facing lot, could you simply change the roof shapes that would accommodate, you know, solar panels, you know? The other thing, I guess, is I love the four styles. I think that makes sense to a lot of people. I'm wondering if there shouldn't be, or if you would consider more of a signature fifth unit, something that sort of stretched to be more architecture, something that went beyond the idea of style. I'm encouraging you to do that. I know all architects love to do that. And so just to hear a city request it maybe would be a help to you guys. But is there a way to do something that has more awareness about architecture, whether it's windows, styles, or, you know, it could be anything, but something that seemed a bit more, had more authorship to it. And I mean that as an encouragement.
Thanks, Bill. Asia?
Yeah, sorry, going back to the previous comments talking about adjustments for things like windows or even roof pitches, just different structural adjustments. Do these plans come with, I'm thinking from a builder's perspective, do they come with like suggestions for adjustments if the homeowner wants to, wants to integrate some other elements? Do these sort of plans come with like instructions or a manual of here are some other things you might do differently or some things that are flexible?
I think we're still working through exactly how to show that, but ideally we'll have some of that, and maybe it goes in the informational documentation, you know, some here's some alternates, or it could go on one sheet on the drawing, just like some alternate floor plans or furniture layouts, just to give people, you know, some ideas on how to use the space. And then I think structurally what we can do is just do it in showing notes what are shear walls and columns, and then what's the stuff that's not a shear wall, so builders will know that they can, or not a supporting wall, like they can know that they can move those around.
Right.
Yeah.
And then my last comment is just from someone who's definitely lived in my share of ADUs before. I have to agree that light is a priority, but also I know that there are some comments about the porch space taking away from interior space, but having a private porch space, I have to put my voice in there and say it's a really valued part of the design. So I appreciate that that's in there.
Sorry, Mike.
I just had one more comment. And I'll jump on the Susan and Bill bandwagon as far as lighting, natural lighting, because I bought a home in Morro Bay, and during the day, all of my light is natural lighting because of solo tubes and natural interior lighting coming from the roof. So again, I just thought about it, but when Susan spoke and then Bill, I didn't see enough of that in these. But I want that option to be in there if possible, as many options as far as natural lighting, tube lighting, you know, solo tubes, I think they're called, Susan, when they come from the roof, because I have like three of them in my home and I never have to turn on a light during the day. So that's perfect. That's exactly what we're looking for. But if you could build more of that into the design options, that would be great. Thank you.
And that's a good energy saver too.
You better believe it. Yeah.
You point out, Mike. Yeah. Yeah. Bill, your hand is still up, but maybe you just haven't clicked on your, did you have another comment?
I'm done. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you. Let's see, Nancy, do we need to open this for public comment being a presentation or no?
Commissioner Stewart, I would suggest that you do that.
All right. Then we will now open this for public comment. Phelan, do we have anybody waiting to speak on this?
Thank you, Chair Stewart. We do not have any raised hands in the queue.
Perfect. Thank you. Then we will close public comment. All right. Well, hopefully we've given you guys some good food for thought. Really appreciate all the work. I think it's a terrific project. And looking forward to seeing what happens moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
All right. Moving on to our consent calendar. We just have the current and advanced planning processing list. Anybody have any questions or comments on that? Like everyone's good, so we will receive and file on that. We have no public hearings. We have no new business. So we just have D1, unfinished business. This was a review and consideration of a policy memo to establish design guidelines for public amenities along the waterfront. Mr. Graham.
Thank you, Chair Stewart. I will share my screen, have a brief presentation. So a little bit of background, this item sort of stems from our September 21st meeting. That would be the meeting where the Planning Commission reviewed Dutchman's project. And as part of that meeting at the end, there was a request to bring back as a future agenda item to the possibility of creation of a policy memo to address design elements along the Harbor Walk or Embarcadero. So we did that on October 19th, provided you a fairly lengthy staff report that sort of touched on all of the guiding policies and principles related to design down on the waterfront from the general plan, recently adopted the downtown and waterfront strategic plan, and the waterfront master plan. Out of that meeting, the Planning Commission discussed options for providing feedback, provided a lot of design examples in that staff report as well, and the Planning Commission agreed to provide written feedback to staff, which I would then bring back at a future meeting. That's today. We did receive written correspondence from Commissioners Stewart and Graffia and Roshan. And that input is provided verbatim in the staff report. Stewart's and Graffia's commentary were largely related to the different design components of the staff report, weighing in on, you know, thoughts on furniture and umbrellas and railings and things like that along the waterfront. Commissioner Roshan's comments were different, and they were really, oriented toward what the language and introduction to the memo might look like. And so I thought, well, the introduction to the memo might be a good place for us to start as far as review goes. And so you can see some of the text that was provided by Commissioner Roshan here, and sort of the introduction to it was the memorandum is intended as a helpful focus and institutionalization of lessons learned and commission emphasis through project review, and is intended to bring implementation to future projects. And then there's five items underneath this. And so I think, you know, the idea would be to try to kind of lock in language related to the written portion of the memo. And then we can move on to kind of coming up with the menu of items that we want to see and probably bring those back for you later. Commissioner Roshan, as opposed to me reading off all of your comments, and I didn't ask you about this, so I apologize if I'm ambushing you now. You wrote these, and you can certainly explain, the reasons behind the way you, stated these in your comments. And so I thought I might offer you the opportunity to sort of go through each one and explain to the rest of the commission, you know, what you were thinking as it relates to each one of these, and then we can turn it back over for overall discussion on the idea. Does that sound reasonable, or would you rather me do it?
Well, Scott, I'd rather you do it. I want to see if it's translating. So,
okay. all good, Commissioner Roshan.
Thanks for the option, though. Yeah,
I know. Okay, I just wanted to watch you looking at me kind of weird, you know, when I was reading off what you had written. Okay, so We'll start with the first item, and it talks about event spaces, and I think Commissioner Roshan has mentioned this at our previous meeting on this in October, and it says along the walk are to be encouraged and required where appropriate, an effort to provide spaces of varying capacities and scales. You know, this idea that we, you know, create certain event spaces along the Embarcadero, I think, is one that seemed to resonate with the rest of the commission, and so having something that reflects that in the policy memo makes sense to me. I'd be curious to see what the rest of the commission has to say about that. The number two item is the fishing village narrative, emphasis through encouragement and requirements to preserve and repurpose our harbor history, artifacts, piers, and structures. I mean, this kind of dovetails right in with that Dutchman project and preserving a portion of that pier and recreating that. I think that's the great example of number two. I don't think I need to explain a whole lot more of what that might look like since you just did that in a recent project. So it would be things similar to that along the waterfront that sort of speak to our history, the fishing village history, and preserving and moving those things forward. Items three and four are a little different, and those sort of deal with things that the commission is going to need to discuss in greater length. Number three is custom graphic umbrellas for identity of the Harbor Walk, branding with a combined effort for passing recognition, and promotion, wayfinding, and clear public space definition through vivid graphics in public spaces. We had kind of a lengthy discussion at the last meeting about umbrellas and what we want them to look like. Do we want to have a specific color that designates the common areas, the public areas there? Do we want to, you know, have the wording on the umbrellas that says Harbor Walk? Where do we want to go with that? I know Commissioners Ingrafia and Stewart weighed in on this, and I'll let them, you know, also speak to this when we sort of talk about all of these items here in a minute. Four is the menu of furniture and planters for selection and inclusion in all Harbor Walk adjacent project submittals, including a menu of existing furniture and planter choices that are favored. I think the idea here is that we develop that menu and we have the Planning Commission agree to that. And it's not the end all be all, I don't think. I think it's sort of an iterative process over time, and it probably will morph over time, and we'll add things to it, maybe take things off of it as we see projects come forward. But I think coming up with an initial, you know, set of sort of menu items for people to choose from for their projects makes a lot of sense. And then the last item five, it talks about planting and furniture plans, and it says required for all Harbor Walk adjacent submittals with an emphasis on zero encroachment to the public way, longevity and maintenance, and protecting optimum views through to the harbor, through to the harbor, Harbor Walk, and commercial establishments and venues. I think all of the planning commissioners, I think this is a nice job, Commissioner Roshan, on this one. I think all of the planning commissioners, expressed desires along everything that's written in this item. So I will be curious to see what you have to say related to this. I'd like to break the maybe the back and forth or the maybe commentary from the Planning Commission into two phases on this. I'd really like to get some buy-in and discussion from the Planning Commission at this point in the presentation, and I'm going to stop sharing my screen now. And I can certainly share it again to bring the graphics back up, but I'm going to stop for the moment anyway. And my idea here would be to have you discuss this sort of introductory language and see, is there things you want to add to it? Is there questions that you have for Commissioner Roshan about what they mean and that type of thing? And then I'd like to, you know, the second phase of this would be to look at items three and four in a little greater depth and talk through those a little bit, and then to get some input from the commission specifically on those two items. So with that, I'd like to hear what the commission has to say regarding sort of that introductory language.
Mike, I see your hand up.
Yeah. Let me lower it. I always like to lower it. That way I don't forget to lower it. All right. So I totally like Bill's introductory language. I remember when we were dealing with Dutchman's, that was the first major, I guess, harbor walk or harbor front or waterfront. They were redesigning it or redoing that area there, Dutchman's, and then we had the Dolphin Shirt Company. And so that was a big deal, I think. So what I was looking for and what we found, were able to find with some, you know, where we came together and and agreed on some certain elements we'd like to see is in recreating the waterfront there. But what we were looking for, I think, at the end of the day, and what all of the comments so far kind of express is a desire to have consistency. So when we do stuff there, we're consistent with how we're doing umbrellas, you know, garbage cans, the graphics, maintaining the fishing village, you know, event spaces. So we were kind of doing all of that in that one project. We were trying to, you know, kick the ball off so that when we did this in the future, when we dealt with another project in the future, we had a baseline somewhere where we could start. So I think Bill did a great job in capturing what we were trying to do. But I agree with Scott that we can come down maybe and really look at the other items to figure out what we'd like to see in general. But I wanted to get the ball rolling, Susan, because I didn't provide comments. You and Bill did, you and Joe did. I didn't because you guys had really had a lot of experience with the waterfront and the Harbor Walk, and I hadn't. That's the first project where I did. So I wanted to see you guys, you, Bill, and Joe, really get the ball rolling, and I was just going to jump on board, and I kind of did. So I just didn't want anybody to think I didn't care about this, because I did, and I did read all the comments, but I wanted just to express myself up front that I totally agree, and I think we got it right with Dutchman's, and we want to just be consistent moving forward. So that's it for me.
Totally appreciate that, Mike. Okay. Yeah, no worries. Joe, have you got any comments on these two introductory parts here?
I certainly agree with the sense that, I have difficulty trying to come up with, you know, other spaces like the space we addressed a few meetings ago with the preserving the actual pier wood and but certainly if those kinds of situations come up, we should give some thought. Again, I don't know exactly what we would do with these as open space events, but you know, that's for the future to tell. We should certainly be prepared to, you know, if somebody comes up with a cool idea for an art installation or I don't even know what, but I think, oh, you know, I'm thinking about it. I had some friends go down for the and watch the Christmas boat parade, and apparently said it was really crowded, and they had difficulty, you know, finding a spot where they weren't shoulder to shoulder with people. So, you know, there's a reason to you know, try and create a little bit more open space with the view of the harbor. With respect to the preserving the fishing village narrative, absolutely, you know. Mm-hmm. Whenever you come across any kind of an artifact that just smacks of a previous age of Mortal Bay, we should do our utmost to try and save it. And if we can't figure a way to save it on the actual harbor walk, then put it someplace else till we can figure out how to do it. I mentioned in my thing, about the little signs or installations that explain the varied history of Morro Bay. I was in, we were somewhere up in the San Juan Islands. So it's a kind of an environment that's really sort of similar to Morro Bay. And you know, they did that. You would be walking, down a side street. Now, I realize typically you can't put these things on the western walls that are facing the harbor, because probably most of that's going to be glass anyway. But particularly on some of the vertical accesses where people have to go down them to get to the harbor, it would be nice if they could conveniently turn to something and read about, you know, what the harbor was used for in World War II, or, the history of oyster, you know, farming, you know, 100 years ago, that sort of thing. I prefer the kind of more, I guess, I don't know, more permanent or museum or art gallery look, you know, you stick it in a wall and it has some kind of permanency and like, rather than signs that, you know, fade significantly after about 10 years. It's really bad. Right. I'll reserve my comments about the umbrella business and the furniture until later.
Susan, can I add on to Joe real quick?
Sure.
Thank you. So, Joe, Thanks. And I think the intent of this memorandum is to, for the next project, is to encourage mm-hmm. people to think about preservation before they start, and to encourage staff to say, yeah, this is now a priority for the commission and then for the city. Same thing with the, you know, the events, the same, you know, if we could create more events, places to sit, you know, places to view the parade, all these things I think have yet to be really incorporated into the Harbor Walk. So these are kind of institutional shifts for staff, but for projects in the future. And, you know, Scott, is that right? I mean, that's what I think we're hoping to accomplish here.
Yeah, no, I think absolutely. I think looking, you know, at the, we actually, you know, we have done planning efforts in the last few years that speak to some of these things, kind of creating, you know, places down along the waterfront where that we could activate, right? Mm-hmm. We did the sort of Embarcadero widening, you know, project that included the Centennial Stair design. It included, you know, creating spaces in our street ends and maybe getting rid of the parking areas in those locations. An example was between Rose's Landing and Libertine, where we were going to enclose that whole street in there and create a public space where people could sit. There could be some amenities there for them, that type of thing. And it kind of connected to the Centennial Plaza thing across the street and then up the stairs. I think it's a takeoff of that and sort of memorializing that in writing, saying that we want some of those types of things, you know, down there. So I think it's
And I'm hoping it's helpful, so you don't get a developer who says, "Why are you telling me this after I've submitted?" Right?
And the interesting part, you know, because we sort of identified the like street ends as an example, we have some of the folks that are looking at doing redevelopment projects on the waterfront. Libertine's a great one. We're engaging with them right now, that are interested in making the plaza improvements. Like, they're interested in doing that piece because they want their development to interact with it, which is what you want the developers to do.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know, think a little more globally as opposed to what's on my postage stamp, but, you know, what's adjacent mm-hmm. to my postage stamp and what can I do over there? And so that's actually good news. But this helps that, like Commissioner Roshan said, so.
Well, and then I'm also hoping that as we do other projects, this grows incrementally, mm-hmm. that we, you know, with real experience, we can, you know, fine tune another memo that maybe makes it even more clear what the opportunities are. So, I think this is not a single one-time thing. I think this continues to grow. Scott, yeah?
No, I agree. I think, you know, I mean, we will have a pretty, you know, this effort probably in the next couple of years will come forward for us to update the waterfront master plan, where we'll be able to memorialize some of these things in a larger planning document. But I think we might always have some of these types of memos moving forward because it allows us to make change and to focus things and make tweaks. And in fact, that might be something that gets incorporated into the waterfront master plan is our ability to make some of those changes without having to go back to revise the document. I think these are good processes to follow. You know, as we learn more about what the waterfront wants to be, you know, or needs to be.
Asia, did you have any comments here?
Yeah, I mean, this is a new, a new project to me. But I read through all of the comments, and hearing you guys talk about it makes sense, having it as like a guiding document, a guiding policy. My only concern is just that it helps, you guys use the word opportunity, it helps maybe people or developers navigate the opportunity for the space, and so I hope it can continue to give that feeling of opportunity and creativity as opposed to making it more difficult to do things in those spaces. Mm-hmm. I like the word opportunity and for creativity down there. But within the boundaries of, I'm thinking about, I think there were comments about the park benches or the design of the bike racks, you know, keeping it within that fishing village vibe or within that preservation of more of base history. But with opportunity for creativity. So I don't know if that makes sense, but
that's great. No, that's good. I'm glad you mentioned the street ends, Scott, because as I was thinking about encouraging event spaces along the Harbor Walk, I think of the Harbor Walk as being that back walkway behind all the buildings adjacent to the harbor. I want to make sure that is eventually a clear and complete and open space for people to walk, to view, you know, what's in the harbor, certainly the lighted boat parade. There would have been more spaces if it had only been continuous. And I want to be careful that we aren't asking the leaseholders to make those spaces even bigger, you know, that we have a sort of a minimum width along those spaces, that we aren't sort of expensing them out too far to make the bigger spaces. Using those street ends for those openings is perfect in my mind, you know, and eliminating parking in those little areas would be great. So definitely appreciate the idea that we are looking for more places for people to be outdoors, but hopefully without impacting the folks who have these leases and need to make money off of them as well. And then in terms of the fishing village narrative, I'm always a big supporter of history, just with a reminder that we are also a living fishing village. We continue to have fishermen who, this is their livelihood, want to make sure that we continue to support that in every way we can. So I think that would be my comments on those first two items. Anybody else? Anything further on those? So maybe we move on. Should we talk umbrellas?
Yeah, I mean, I can bring the presentation back up, but I think really what we're talking about here is getting some input and maybe, you know, hearing the commission's thought on, do we want to just simply brand them Harbor Walk and have that placed on them for the ones in public spaces? Do we want to come up with, I think I wrote in there, we could come up with some sort of logo or something that goes along with that, that sort of is representative of that. That's a little more work and take a little bit of time to do. So it's not something that we could really implement like tomorrow. But I don't think it would take too long to do that. Or do we want to go with a color or a color palette for the umbrellas? Getting some kind of input on that would be good.
So for me, and I think I expressed that, I like the idea of just, you know, stamp them with the Harbor Walk so we have that consistency, so that you've identified the Harbor Walk as a public area. And if you have that little Harbor Walk logo on an umbrella of whatever color it is, it suggests, oh, this is another one of those open areas versus what some shopkeeper might have on their umbrellas. That's just my, you know, keep it simple, but also consistent and mm-hmm. help visitors. When they see the same thing over and over, it starts to, you know, get into their mind that's the experience that they're having. And Bill, you had your hand starting to go up, I think.
Yeah, thanks. Scott, do we have any kind of graphic opportunity in-house? Do we have anybody who does graphics?
We don't really. I have a couple of folks outside that do graphics that it wouldn't be so expensive.
Do we have funds that we could get a couple of I'm not saying some big giant effort. I'm just saying my experience is you need graphic help.
I need graphic help.
Well, not just you. We all do.
We do. I agree.
What about the Tourism Bureau? I mean, that's kind of their job, is to sort of brand and provide graphics and...
I mean, I could talk to them, sure. I mean, I don't know what the kind of assistance they have in-house. So I
think, you know, especially if we have some funds available, I think it's modest. The thing that would be great is if we can get a couple of options, maybe, you know, after staff reviews them, to run them by the commission, then we can kind of all see, is this going to work? Is it going to be effective? And we can offer our best advice to say, yeah, what we're trying to do is identify the Harbor Walk, celebrate it, and make sure the public space is clear. And I think that's Susan's comment, is what we want to do is make sure that people know this is public, not private. And that's what some kind of graphic on the umbrella, I think, would accomplish.
Scott, do you have that Harbor Walk logo that exists? It's like the little footprints and I think a wave.
We have something. I mean,
you probably don't have it right.
I know exactly what you're talking about, but yes.
Yeah.
Bill, can I ask you a question, Bill?
Yeah.
This mic. Would that include the benches and the say the bike racks and you mean are we going to include say this our graphic artists, would they tag all of those things as Harbor Walk, the umbrellas, the benches, the garbage cans? You mean
I keep it simple. With the umbrellas. I think the umbrellas are like vivid and you know they're going to be evident, and we're going to get a lot of bang for our buck on the umbrellas. The benches are cool, less so. The trash
cans. We have a lot of garbage cans, though, too. That's the other part.
Yeah, I mean, we could do all of that. But I think the thing that would be transformative and easy and quick would be the umbrellas. So I wouldn't expand it just yet. Maybe we try the umbrellas first. Scott, do you have a take on that?
Yeah, no, I like the idea of the umbrellas. I think they really can enliven a space. You know, they're colorful, and I think they draw people's attention to them, especially if we have some kind of logo or graphic on them that's sort of representative of the Harbor Walk. I think that's a good place to start. And then we could, I think we can take a look at that and see if we want to roll it out to other things. Like I said, my feeling is the process is iterative, and it will grow over time or shrink over time, depending, I guess, what we do. But I think we should start somewhere, and I think that's a good place to start. And it's not expensive. So.
I have a quick question. I can't remember, but you know those flags that you see on, like, light poles or whatever that have, like, the branding of a district? Do we have those down there right now?
We do. The chamber, I think Erica Crawford's watching our telecast right now, recently put up holiday banners on them, on several of the ones in the downtown, and I think down on the waterfront. So we kind of identified where all the poles were, had to change out the brackets to get it all work, and then she went and got those, and I think our folks might have put them up. I'm not sure.
Because if there's some kind of cohesive branding between that and the umbrellas, if there's a permanent sort of flag that's there the rest of the year,
They have a series of them. There are various ones that have been put up at different times. There used to be events like when we had the car show banners would go up. We'd also talked about doing, I always liked the idea of banners in the various parts of town that were somehow identifying those parts. So you had the Old Town, the Embarcadero, the North Morro Bay, even Quintana. And then they could be tied in with wayfinding signage and maps, but that never really realized.
The umbrellas are an opportunity to identify that branding that might be able to be consistent across those sorts of markers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, even just a little logo in the corner of each of the banners that, you know, maybe was seasonal or event-based that, you know, again, identified here we are at the Harbor Walk.
You need the competition.
Well, the thing I think that could be really powerful about the umbrellas is they're actually going to occupy the space. Mm-hmm. So it's not just an announcement or a sign, but they're going to be where the public space is. And I think that's powerful spatially. It's powerful architecturally. And I think the fact that it also does two things, you know, it identifies stuff, but it kind of enlivens space, right? It kind of suggests, come sit here, right? So there's something really, I think, effective about trying to expose the Harbor Walk rather than making it too much about the stuff in the front. So I like the idea of more subtle connection. You know what I mean? So it doesn't become decorative. It becomes actually a kind of a functional logo, if I'm explaining it. Yeah.
Okay. Shall we move on to a menu of furniture and planters?
Let me see here. So that menu item, that's number four on the list. I think Commissioners Stewart and Graffia spoke specifically to all of these categories here. Mm-hmm. can do so now, I suppose. The list of items that was kind of on there was, you know, benches, trash and recycling containers, railings, the bull rail edges for the wharfs, bike racks, other furnishings like tables and chairs, umbrellas again, paving and what that might look like along the waterfront, decking materials, plantings and planters, lighting. I think lighting, you know, we all kind of agree that we want the warmer Kelvin scale lighting. I think that's probably easy. Don't have to do much with that. Commissioner Ngrofi, you were just talking about the interpretive signs, and you had a different idea about, I mean, maybe you don't like them so much in, like, the corners on the harbor walk. You prefer them mounted on the wall, perhaps, and you spoke to that a minute ago, so that's maybe a little bit of a different thing there. Again, I think you two commissioners, at least Commissioner Stewart and Ngrofi, spoke specifically to many of those items. I think ideally getting some input right now from you on, you know, what your thoughts are on those. It's a big kind of get, though, right, because you don't really have – in the staff report, there's a lot of examples, but those are samples kind of – put together from current documents that we have, and then maybe it maybe weren't necessarily – put together with the thought of placing those things on the waterfront necessarily. So it might be good, a good idea to get some of your input as it relates to materials you'd like to see in some of those categories. And then let me go after hearing what you have to say about that. And then I can come back with a menu of items that I can show you and like, hey, under each category, these are some items, not the end all be all. Certainly you can come up with other ones, but I'll give you four or five, you know, items in each thing. And that way you can choose from those. And then we can pick the ones we like the best, get rid of the ones we don't like, and go from there. I think it's probably a lot easier to do that than maybe to try to pick them right now, given that we don't really have that kind of comprehensive list based on input that you provided. So I'm happy to take whatever input you have in those sort of categories, and then we'll go back and you know, kind of work on getting you that menu to pick from next time, and you can just literally go through and pick the ones you want, throw the ones out you don't, and we can start with that. And then as we move forward, again, it can be an iterative process. If we decide we like some other things that we don't have on there, we can put those on. If we decide we don't like some of the things that are on there, we can get rid of them. So what do you guys think?
Sounds good to me. You know, just in general, I personally like the looks that are lighter and more flexible. You know, I'm not a big fan of hunky concrete, you know, benches and that sort of thing, but I can also see how maybe they're easy to clean and durable, but maybe not as aesthetic or easy to sit on. So, you know, as I went through your staff report, I sort of circled, well, I like this one, don't like that one, you know, so that's an easy process to go through.
Yeah. And that's what I'm happy to bring back. I think it can be really that simple, I think.
Absolutely.
And just in thinking about the stuff that I did provide you previously that was put together as more of the background where we have where the design concepts come from in our land use documents that we have, and that was really more the intent behind that and to get you thinking along those lines. It wasn't necessarily to, hey, here's an example of something we should choose. I wasn't really doing that. And so if you look at those and you're like, wow, that doesn't really feel like Morro Bay, I'm right there with you.
I really liked Commissioner Ngrofia's comments that he gave. Consistency was one, emphasized simple and classic, not the intricate and the currently fashionable. Maritime artifacts should be sparingly used and authentic, not cliched. I really like that. Strive to make public seating areas, vertical access ways immediately recognizable, and emphasize preservation of prominent historical artifacts. Those were all great comments. Joe, thanks.
Yeah, I don't have much more to add. I mean, really, it's likewise, the notion of benches and trash cans in any sense being concrete and monumental and massive, that just doesn't seem appropriate given the informality and the supposed friendliness of Morro Bay. You know, things should be light and airy, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Give some thought to comfort. You know, if you have to sacrifice a little bit of durability in exchange for some lightness, you know, I think that's a pretty decent trade-off. And, you know, and I didn't really mean to imply that I'm in any way opposed to having those little informational placards mm-hmm. on the Arbor Walk. I'm a kind of a history buff, and I know you can't don't want to clutter up the Harbor Walk, but I just love these installations that are sort of out of the way, and you notice as you're walking to some place, and you find out about some famous person. Not that Morro Bay has a famous person who lived here in 1840, but you know what I'm talking about. There are these interesting sides that it's kind of delightful to find out about, but you don't put them center stage.
Well, we do have those hidden history panels, of course, which are often tied in with projects. Kathy Novak, of course, has been super helpful with getting that through, and the Historical Society has worked on it. But I do like the idea of those monument kinds of things mm-hmm. that could be part of self-guided tours. Yeah, I like that thought. Mike?
Yeah, Susan, let me put my hand down first. I like Bill's recommendation, and I think Scott kind of agreed that if we could start with the umbrellas and kind of continue to work on this, because, you know, every time I start working on this, I kind of separate things a little bit and say, okay, when am I working on the waterfront, and when am I working on the street front, and what's between? In other words, we're kind of dealing with, right, more than just the waterfront when we start talking about benches, right? Racks, garbage cans, you know, we're leaving the waterfront. So what I'm saying, I think Bill was trying to, this whole thing started with the word waterfront. Bill was trying to identify the waterfront, you know, by having these umbrellas, them being consistent, people would see them, blah, 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 right? So all of a sudden we've identified our waterfront, but now we're trying to do the info, we're trying to do the rest of the waterfront and the street front. Right, because in some areas it's only 25 feet between the waterfront and the street front. But every time I've got to say this, every time I walk down Embarcadero, I see something I haven't seen in the past. You know, I look for something I haven't seen. So what I'm saying is this will be an ongoing process, but I think a good start would be to get those umbrellas kind of worked out. But us continue to think about, you know, circle the kind of benches we want, circle the kind of, you know, garbage cans we want, but we can continue to do that. But I think a good start will be trying to work on the umbrellas, getting the graphics for that, and us coming back and giving Scott what we'd like to see as far as, or what our ideas are with the other stuff. Because I don't think we're going to figure that all out tonight.
Oh, no. No, I think Scott's idea was to bring back a palette.
Because you guys all had great ideas, and I'd just like to give it another look and actually go down there again and, you know, see what I think would work best as well. So that gives me another shot at it, too.
I see you, your hand up there, but let me ask a quick question of Scott. You know, just as to what Mike was saying, I think of it as the whole Embarcadero, basically, and probably that. But the one side of the Embarcadero has one set of issues, and then across the street has a whole other set. And I think we do need that waterfront master plan, perhaps, to make these things apply to both sides of the street. So that's something, you know, maybe just to keep in the back of our minds as we look at this, to make sure that whatever we do come up with can fit on both sides of the street, because I think that consistency would be good.
And can I say something real quick, Susan?
Sure.
You're absolutely right. Whenever I walk down to the Embarcadero, I look at the right side, and I see, you know, towards the harbor. And then I look to the left side as I'm walking south, and it just doesn't look the same. It doesn't fit, you know, it doesn't quite fit the way.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah, see, that's what, and I think you just said that, right? Didn't you just say that? So, yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I have a tendency of wanting to look to the right towards the harbor and the rock and not look to the left because I don't like what I'm seeing as much. And I'm going to be honest. So, you know, I think you just started something there. I didn't never really realize that. So if you cross the street, you're going to get something totally different sometimes.
Yeah.
Where you have to cross the street. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you do.
All right, Mr. Bill.
I think everybody's comments have been great. You know, Joe, Susan, Mike, I'm with you all. And I'd like to go back to what Scott proposed. I think we can be much more, not just efficient, but effective. if he comes back with things and we can kind of, you know, weigh in, I think the five of us will have a great perspective to say why this works, why that doesn't. And Scott, if you could include not only like new proposals, but the furniture that you guys think would be replicable. You know, if there's stuff there already, let's, you know, just consider it. Because I love the idea of a, you know, a bigger menu that can kind of fit different spaces, different places. And, you know, I think we could be most helpful with something in front of us, you know. And so if how hard is that to come back with stuff for us?
I mean, I think it's just going through all those things. I mean, where you start with this is actually just what you said. I always start with these efforts by walking along the waterfront. I do that frequently, so it's not a big deal, and it's a nice place to walk. So, but it's finding out what we have and then looking at the things that I like and looking at the things that I don't like or I think don't work. I mean, that's a great way to start, right? Then the things that I don't like or don't think work, I don't propose things that look like that, right? And then if you see things that do kind of work, you kind of go along with those themes, and that sort of helps you start the process. I've already sort of done this a little bit in the past, so that's kind of what I envision sort of starting it off with. And I think when we're able to bring something back to you, I think like Commissioner Rodriguez was saying, you walk around, you can take the list of things and you can walk down the waterfront and say, does it look like it should be here or not? You know, I mean, that's how you put the X through the one that you don't like and circle the one that you do. That's probably the best way to do it. And so that's sort of how I envision seeing it happen. I'm also happy to take any, you know, examples of things that you've seen here or elsewhere that you think is interesting and sort of throw that into the mix as well. If you have strong, you know, ideas about any sort of types of furniture or seating and that type of thing, happy to take that from the commission as well and putting that together. Probably looking to come back with this. We're not going to be having our next meeting because we don't have items for it right now. So it would probably be the first meeting in February is my guess, putting this together. Also, it'll take me a little bit of work to make some contact on getting a graphic or logo thing. So I want to, you know, we have to kind of pass the holidays to make that happen probably. So
Scott, do you think we could issue the memo just so we get something out there before the next project comes and also in response to the Dutchman? So that it's just kind of clear what we've learned, even if we don't have everything else ready?
I mean, we certainly could if it was going to be longer than that. I think that time frame works from a project standpoint. We don't have ones that are pending. We are going to get Libertine coming in right now. They're going to come in for a conceptual review, kind of like the Harbor Street Hotel did, so you'll get to see that. That's a waterfront and a big change there. But it'll really be more of a, you know, back and forth, you know, tell them what you like, what you don't like type of thing. And we've been working with him for a while trying to get his plan squared away. But other than that, we don't have anything that's really pending out there that's on the waterfront. So, and we have your input to this point, so we'd be able to provide and would provide that, you know, sort of, you know, moving forward to anybody that came forward. So I don't know that it needs to be, you know, like come back first meeting and second meeting in January and adopt just the written language of it.
Okay, thanks.
But I think I will bring it back when we do with the items to pick. I'll bring it back to that one, and we'll approve the language then. And that's when right after that meeting is when we'll post it, right? Even if we're still working on the menu.
Sounds good. Joe?
You know, just as an aside, I have a suspicion we're going to have to get really specific about the maximum size of these umbrellas. And I, for one, with respect to the water side of the Embarcadero, I think the umbrella should go in tables, and the tables have to be anchored. Otherwise, I just see a whole lot of problems with big umbrellas and tables creeping into places where they shouldn't be. So, just a thought.
Okay, Asia, anything else from you?
Nothing else.
Okay, just wanted to give you the opportunity.
Thank you.
All right, I think we've got the marching orders here. Do we need to open this for public comment?
Yeah, you should open it for public comment.
Let's see. Have we got anybody waiting to talk with us?
Yes, we have Erica Crawford.
Well, we always love to hear from Erica.
All right, good. Erica, you've been muted.
Hi, everyone. Hello, Planning Commission. I'm sorry, I don't have prepared comments, but it's been a really great discussion
to be involved in tonight and to be able to listen to. I just wanted to offer, I've not really heard the commission discuss any of the private public sector investment in some of these. I guess they're called requirements, you know, if an umbrella is required to have a certain kind of a logo, how much is that burden on the public sector or the private sector to get that accomplished? And we did talk a little bit about the banners earlier, and that was actually a private sector investment that the holiday banners are up citywide. We were able to raise $8,000 from our private sector members to get that accomplished. So just, I would be interested in hearing the commission's comments on some of those things. I just haven't heard that yet. So, but great discussion so far. I'm enjoying the meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Erica. Thanks for pitching in. I think I do agree, and that's kind of where I was headed with that issue of, you know, creating these wider spaces, say for the Harbor Walk, whether we do put too much burden on the private sector who is making substantial investment in their properties. But that might be an interesting discussion. You know, I think, say, in the sake of Dutchman, he was offering to make improvements in public areas that he didn't necessarily have to. One would hope, again, that the idea of imprinting a logo on an umbrella, you know, whatever we come up with, whether it's the Harbor Walk design or something, wouldn't be too expensive, or whether that would be something the city would do. Don't know if you have thoughts on that, Scott.
I think it's both. I absolutely appreciate where Erica was coming from. I think we're viewing all of this as these are not things we're requiring of folks that come forward, but the applicants that come forward to redevelop the lease sites on the waterfront bring these things forward already. They're always coming forward with seating options that are in, some of them are for their business and for, say, a restaurant or whatever, but some of it's public, right? You know, and then we have to, like, condition the, you know, heck out of it to make sure it stays public. You know, you can't have setups on the table, no ketchup, mustard on there, those types of things. We're really just getting away from that, saying, hey, and that sort of blurs the line. You know, we have an issue. We're always constantly chasing that. You know, I think that's where this sort of stems from, is what is private space and what is public space, or what is, you know, that type of thing. I think this is looking at that. And if, you know, a developer on the waterfront is looking to redevelop their site and they're picking tables and chairs out there, why not have a menu of things that are tables and chairs that we think will represent public space? As opposed to the tables and chairs that look just like the tables and chairs that are on their lease site that are for diners. Maybe we don't want that, so we don't blur that public space. I think we're really just giving them options of things we want to see in the public space so it stays looking public. And the longer we go, the more of these things we get as these sites we develop. And so it looks more that way, because I've heard every single one of you comment on that maybe some of our public spaces don't look so public. And it's a problem that we have. And I think that's really it. So I don't think we're really trying to put any additional burden on the lease holders. We're just trying to say, hey, we want to, here's the things we'd like you to choose from when you're putting the tables and chairs and benches and stuff out there. And we want you to choose from this sort of palette, because that's the palette we want to use for the public space.
Great.
So it shouldn't be any more expensive than what they were already proposing, really.
Mm-hmm. Maybe even less sometimes. Bill.
A quick response. One, I like Erica's comments. First, I like that she's enjoying our discussion, so thank you, Erica. Two, I would suggest we do the graphic thing and get costs so we realize, you know, is this really an issue? Maybe not so much. You know, and we could always find ways to, I don't know, get donors or you know, represent sponsors. So I think those things come down the line. Does that make sense, Scott?
Oh, no, I mean, if we're going to go get the design for them, we're going to go get what the cost would be to, you know, roll it out for umbrellas and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
That's part of the whole thing. I mean, if it ends up being super expensive, it doesn't make a lot of sense for us to be doing that necessarily. So.
Great. All right. And Highland, did we have anybody else in public comment waiting?
No, Chair. There are no more raised hands in the queue.
Great. Thank you. All right. I think we can close this item. and move on to Planning Commissioner comments and future agenda items. When are we going to be looking at zoning code stuff again?
Right now, we are in the process. We're getting some response stuff for you guys because we have we're putting together the tables right now. We have a bunch of staff on vacation and stuff, so there's a little bit of a lag. So that probably won't get picked back up until after the holidays. And we're trying to get a meeting with the Coastal Commission to talk about affordable accommodations and to talk about some potential changes related to land use and zoning policies related to the power plant site. We need to get those finalized. The big piece of that is the affordable accommodation policy that we need to bring back. And then we have commentary from the Planning Commission that we need to respond to. And we're going to give you the like top 10, top 12 items. We've identified what those are. We have one of our, now we have our assistant planner working on some of that right now too. The idea is to get the comment sheets back to you so you can see all those, put those items together for you and bring that back so you have some time to mull that over before we bring it back to hearing. Hoping to do it in February. It does really depend on getting input back from Coastal though. I want this to be one of the adoption hearings for Planning Commission when I come back. So I want to have answers to all of those things. I'm not saying that you need to go through it in one meeting, but I'd like it to be at least the first of the adoption hearings, and in order to do that, I need to give you full packages, and you didn't have that last time. So that's what I intend to bring back, and a little bit of it's predicated on scheduling at Coastal. They have a big kind of shakeup in their hierarchy in the Central Coast office. One of the longtime managers is retired. We're hoping one of the other folks that we have a good relationship with is going to get put in that spot. But they are, going through that sort of readjustment period now. And so getting them, on the phone and setting meetings and stuff is not always quick.
Great. Okay. Well, thanks for that. Bill.
I do have one thing. I mentioned earlier when we were looking at the ADUs about the affordable housing study for ADUs. And Susan, mm-hmm. I had mentioned this to you before. And this was a study that I was involved in as a reviewer. It was done by Inclusive Action is the name of the group, but it was a study looking about how to make ADUs really affordable, to find incentives to do it. I'd like to suggest that I'm going to reach out to that group and ask them to do a presentation for us. Scott, you said we might have time on the second meeting in January. It's an information-only presentation, but I think I'd love to hear it and see if we can get some momentum from the commission towards that, and then we can see if the county will help us with some of that or what the city can do. But I think it's a really valuable and very current look at what ADUs are. So,
absolutely. So could you clarify, Bill, when you talk about keeping them affordable? You mean affordable to rent or live in versus affordable to build or both?
The affordability that's there because they're small and they can mm-hmm. be done efficiently is there. This is above that. So this is finding incentives that would make a landowner commit to renting this to
long-term rentals. Yeah.
Affordable.
Yeah. So we're definitely seeing
percentage of income affordability.
Yeah.
And I think
it's good. Yeah.
Well, I think you heard Nancy Hubbard say that part of our housing element implementation that we're working with RRM on is to come up with incentives. So this timing is actually good, Commissioner Roshan. I think pulling them into that presentation as well might be a good idea to have them kind of pay attention to what we're doing. So. I think everybody can use all the help they can get when it comes to these types of things. I know that was going to be when we met with RRM on it, that was going to be the big thing. Like, how do we incentivize the affordability? How do we do that? And a lot of ideas thrown out there, but that was the tough get. Was like, what are we going to come up with for that? So
I can tell you, after working a year and a half on it, it's a complicated issue. But let's look at some options and see what we think.
That would be great.
Yeah, and Bill, and that's exactly what I was trying to get at the first, with our first presentation, the fact that I'm thinking about both sides of it, you know, affordability to build for the homeowner who wants to do it, as well as affordability to rent out as an affordable unit. So I'm trying to take care of two things at once, because like Scott said, this is a perfect time to do it.
And Mike, you're right. You know, if it costs too much to build it, then they're going to have to ask a whole lot more to rent it out.
That's right. So I just didn't hear enough of that, you know, on the first presentation. That's why it kind of prompted it a little, the presenters to kind of deal with the affordability aspects on both sides for the person who wants to do it, who wants it for themselves, as well as somebody who might want to build these for affordability purposes.
I mean, the presentation we saw tonight had none of that. It was just looking at basically floor plans.
Yeah. Yes. I think it was an overview. I think they were thinking about it, though.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That's why I kind of said it would be great to add it in there. That way it doesn't miss, you know, nobody misses it, right? Because I missed it, and Bill did, and you did, Susan.
Yeah, and the incentives are mostly going to come from Scott and the county.
Okay.
It's got to be a city thing and a county thing. Okay. So it's not really about the designs. You know, there's not much they can do.
That's right.
I don't know if this is the right place. I mean, I didn't think that was the most creative effort around the ADUs. Don't know if we should push further, but to build ADUs and to encourage them, this is an overwhelming project for most homeowners to build a house. And even though it's small, it still means you've got to do sewer, electrical, you have to deal with the codes, you have to deal with the city, you got to deal with the contractor. It's a very complicated effort, even though it's not a big space.
I think your idea of educating us on how property taxes might become an incentive for building things is astounding. That never even occurred to me. Are there any? I'm just so curious. Any other incentives that you're aware of? Because I'm trying to think about this.
Yeah, I think the biggest one that seemed to be effective was property tax.
Yeah,
and that one's giant, and that one has to be orchestrated. Other things are incentives that the city might be able to bring. That could be timing. That could be permit fees. But they are more modest, but they still help. So, and there's a list of about 10 things we can at least look at.
Bill, I was going to ask you a question, Bill, and then Scott. You know, you said you had this group, the Incentivize Action. Is that the name of the group?
Inclusive Action.
Inclusive. Okay, so do you think we could get them then to do, you had recommended that they be put on the agenda for a presentation.
Yeah.
Do you think would all that timing work with trying to get this information up the food chain with what we're trying to do here? You know, we've been talking about affordability for the timing would work. Could we make a recommendation or would at that meeting, at that hearing, where they do that presentation, would we take some kind of action as a commission?
No.
No, okay. No.
It would be an action item. It's an informational item.
Okay.
We're working on this on a parallel track, right?
Okay, good.
And on a track that had nothing to do with the presentation that you had this evening, although they're connected in some ways. You know,
yes.
Trying to design the units to be easy to construct so they're not expensive to construct. So that's part of it. But there's tiers to this. Like, I think Commissioner Stewart, you've mentioned this before. So we get a lot of ADUs built, but you don't see a lot of ADUs on the market for rent, right? So one of the incentive packages might be, okay, well, if we do this, you just agree to a rent it out, period.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people are holding them as, guest houses and things like that. So we could come up with a package, a tier that's that. And the next tier would be, we're going to deed restrict you for affordability if we give you these incentives. That's some of the conversation that I had, early on with the RRM group was looking at that. Like, how do we incentivize, one, just to have them rent it out, period, and, like, lock that in? And then what's the next step is we can make them affordable, make them stay affordable, not just say they're affordable by design. So those are the types of things on that track that we're looking at from the implementation side of the housing bill.
Well, and is the state offering any tax incentives or programs or anything alongside this law? Okay.
Not currently. They're going to throw up a whole bunch more legislation, though.
I know that there's this, maybe this group will address some of the funding that's being released through the state for, there's these big funding packages coming through, and pardon me, I haven't looked at the housing and community development part of that yet. I'm wondering if it'll address ADUs at all.
I don't know. I know they're still breaking up the buckets, I'll call them. You know, they had the $15 billion that was released for, a number of different things, and they're putting those in the different buckets and then assigning them to, you know, different state agencies to deal with. And now they're hiring in all those state agencies right now.
They haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, to help create and then, you know, monitor the program. So I don't know how soon we're going to get a lot of answers on that, just kind of seeing it from the city view anyway.
So, Asia, I could offer one of the things the report studied is how hard it is to get that funding, right, and how competitive it is. But one of the options is finance. If we can find a way to finance these projects because they're affordable, in other words, bring in banks to begin with so that the financing is easy and readily available based on the fact that the owner will commit to affordability, that was a big incentive. Mm-hmm. If we could find a way to get them financed.
I could see that.
Yeah. I wonder, Bill, you know, if we get to the point where there are a fair number of these off-the-shelf plans for ADUs, then I wonder if that might not incentivize some private enterprise who says, you know, I've got this factory and I can build this core of a kitchen and a bathroom. Mm-hmm. Plug this into the middle of 20 different ADU plans, and then is that a sizable saving, or am I just dreaming?
You would think, but I've been in the profession for 40 years. We talked this way 40 years ago, and it still hasn't happened. Manufactured housing is still modest. Mm-hmm. It is not a mainstay thing. It's happening, but not big. Mm-hmm. Should it happen for the ADUs? Absolutely. It should. But the percentage you save there is not as big as you might think.
Well, so again, I was only, I probably shouldn't even be talking because I don't know anything.
Yeah, I mean, my experience is it's not as big as you would think. The harder thing is the financing, actually. Yeah, and just the process itself.
And that's true, even if it's not the whole structure, it's just the kind of what I call the expensive plumbing, electrical, sewer, and all that business.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, we talked about trying to get people that could help, because one of the things that's overwhelming is for somebody who's never built something to take on this process. It's very frightening. You know, I mean, you make one mistake and you put the thing over an easement and you got to, you know what I mean? There's a lot of ways to mess up. So if there was some way to sort of help people, you know, and that's maybe something we can talk about too. And Morro Bay, that might be a doable thing.
Mike?
Yeah, Bill, I was going to ask. So did you still want to add that to the agenda, Bill, our next agenda, or not?
Yeah, I did. I mean, if we could
okay,
have...
Okay, see, that's where we were at. Discussion. When we started this discussion, we were started at your, you know,
yeah.
Now we're back to that. So do you think this would be a good thing to have on our agenda?
Yeah, and let's, you know, Scott said there might be time, the second meeting in January.
Okay.
So
I would second, yeah.
Susan, if you want.
Sure.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be great. I would love to see that. Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Any other future agenda items or comments? Okay. Then on to Scott.
I referenced previously that our next meeting, we're not going to have it. We don't have any items for the agenda, and they literally need to have all the staff reports and stuff prepared today or tomorrow. So we're not going to have that meeting, so you get a break. And we'll reconvene at our second meeting in January, where we do have a couple of items, I think, that are gonna be ready. So,
yeah, and Susan, I was going to tell Scott that we were meeting the week of Christmas, and we possibly would have met the week of New Year. And I said, you know what? I'm going to be in Yosemite, but I may call from the top of the mountain. Call into the meeting. So guess what, Scott? Thank you. I will be at Yosemite. I would have called in if you would have needed my boat, but thank you for giving me a
fun in Yosemite.
You're gonna do the Awani dinner, Mike?
Huh?
The Awani dinner, you know.
I've never been to Yosemite.
Oh,
oh my gosh.
Never.
Wow.
Can you believe I was actually gonna pass it up to join this meeting?
Yes.
No, don't do that.
No. Scott, let me off the hook. So I did do it for Christmas, but that's where I'll be in that first week of January. I'll be at the Yosemite for the first time in my life.
Great.
Okay.
Have fun. So, take pictures. Lots of
will
pictures.
Will do.
All right, then I think we are ready to adjourn. Our next meeting will be January 18th, it sounds like, cool. And I'm just assuming we're going to be still Zooming.
I'll pause right there and say we are looking at, you know, opportunities to go back live in person at the Vets Hall, but probably not for a couple of months.
I think we're going to see how
Omicron is going to, you know, affect after the Christmas holiday and that type of thing. But we are you know, looking at that, as is all of the other cities in the county that aren't currently, you know, having live. We are looking at that.
Great. Okay. Until then, stay healthy, stay safe, and have a good Christmas.
Well, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Before we go, Susan, real quick word. I had a really good gift for all of you guys, but because we're not meeting, I'm going to save it till next year. But let me say how much I've enjoyed this year on the commission. It's really great, and I'm so happy that Mike is joining us in Asia. Welcome. It's a really good group, and I'm really enjoying what we're doing and feel very good about it. So thank you all. Happy holidays.
Yeah. Be safe.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.